Now, friends, if you have your Bible or the notes, turn to 1 Thessalonians. We're back in the New Testament, and we've come now to an epistle that is well along in the New Testament, almost to the end of Paul's epistles as far as the arrangement in the New Testament. But actually, we now take up the first epistle that Paul wrote, and he wrote it to the Thessalonians. So today, I'd like to give you some background that will help us to understand and appreciate this very wonderful epistle. Now, as to Thessalonica, it was what was known as a Roman colony. Now, Rome had a way of, as they would capture a people, they never attempted to do everything that I think today that we try to do, not for people we capture, but we are trying to Americanize people throughout the world, as if that would be ideal. I have my doubts whether it'd be ideal or not. And there was a time when we sent missionaries, not to try to make them like we are, but to try to make them children of God through faith in Christ. But today, all that has changed as far as our program is concerned. Now, Rome was much wiser than that. Rome did not attempt to change the culture or to change the habits or the customs or the language of people they took. But in these different areas, arranged geographically and in a strategic spot, they would start a colony, generally a city that was there. That meant that that city or that area would adopt Roman laws, Roman customs, Roman ways, and you would see in the local department stores the latest thing they were wearing in Rome, and it was very much like Rome. Now, Thessalonica was a very important city in that day. And by the way, it's still in existence, called Salonica today, and still a very important place. Now, Thessalonica was a Roman colony, which means they lived like they did in Rome. And it was very important in the life of the Roman Empire. It was 100 miles west of Philippi. That's where we left Paul the last time. He'd gone to Philippi and had established there a church. Now, he moved on 100 miles to Thessalonica. Now, it was north of Athens, and it was the chief city of Macedonia. Cicero, the great Roman, said, Thessalonica is in the bosom of the empire. That means right in the very center and the heart of the empire. Now, it was first named Therma because of the hot springs that were in that area. But in 316 B.C., Cassandra, and he was one of the generals of Alexander the Great. There were 4 generals that divided the empire of Alexander, and Cassander took Macedonia. That is the home base, by the way. And he named Therma, or as we know it today as Salonica, he named it Thessalonica in memory of his wife, who was a half-sister of Alexander the Great. Now, this city was a very important city, and the church in Thessalonica was rather a model church. We are told here in this first epistle, first chapter, verse 7, so that ye were in samples to all that believe in Macedonia and Achaia. That is, in that entire area that we would call Greece today. This church was an example, and it was an example to Corinth, which is in that area also. That's in 2 Corinthians 8, and you'll find that in the first 5 verses. This church was one of the first that was established on Paul's second missionary journey. Now let me pick up where we left off of Paul before. Now, you'll recall that on his second missionary journey, he and Barnabas had separated, and Paul took Silas with him, and along the route, he picked up Timothy, and Dr. Luke joined the group. But he visited the churches in Galatia, tempted to make a wider circle, and there was a tremendous population in that area, and he was going over into what we call today Turkey. We think of it as Asia Minor. And he intended in that area, apparently, to carry on mission work. And I think that's obvious because on his third missionary journey, he probably did his greatest missionary work with Ephesus as the headquarters. But the Spirit of God at this time put up a roadblock, would not let him go south. And he attempted to go up into Bithynia along the southern coast of the Black Sea. And again, the Spirit of God put up a roadblock. He can't go north. He can't go south. He moves toward the west, comes to Troas, waits for orders, has the vision of the man of Macedonia, crosses over to Philippi, finds out the man of Macedonia was a woman by the name of Lydia that was a seller of purple. She ran the department store there. And Paul led her to the Lord, a group that were there. And then the church was established. Paul left Philippi. Now he comes to Thessalonica. And he's in Thessalonica. Actually, we're told 3 Sabbath days. In the 17th chapter of Acts, at verse 2, we're told that he reasoned in the synagogue 3 Sabbath days. Now, that means he had to be there less than 1 month. And in that 1 month, Paul did a Herculean task. He did a mission work. He led multitudes to Christ. When I say multitudes, I mean that. Paul was an effective missionary. Now, he established a church. And in that time, he not only organized a local church, but he taught them the great doctrines of the Christian faith. And we'll see that as we get into this epistle and the next one. He taught them things that today, in churches that have been in existence 100 years, they know nothing about: the rapture of the church and the coming of Christ to establish his kingdom here on this earth. It's just a foggy notion to a great many that are in churches 100 years old. This church was not even a month old. And Paul is making known the great doctrines of the Christian faith. Now, he left Thessalonica, and I'm putting that mildly. He was run out of town. He had to leave. Now he went down to Berea. He did a work there, took ship and went over to Athens, and he ministered there. I don't know how long he was there. I noticed the New Scofield Bible says that it was shortly. Well, I don't know where they get shortly, but that's a relative term. Shortly could mean any time from 1 day to 1,000 years, but I don't think it was 1,000 years, and I don't think it was 1 day. I think months went by. And then Paul went down to Corinth, and he's waiting for Timothy and Silas to come and bring word concerning the Thessalonians. All right? They joined him in Corinth. And I'm sure there was a time lapse, because we'll find out in the 4th chapter some of the saints, some of the ones that had come to Christ, died in the meantime, and there was a real question whether they were going to be in the rapture or not. And that, to me, would prove that Paul taught the soon coming of Christ, the imminent coming of Christ for his church. Well, anyway, we find that there were some questions raised. Now, Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians to answer these questions and to instruct these people further and to comfort them. They needed that. And there is generally given a threefold purpose for the writing of this epistle, and that is to confirm young converts in the great elementary truths of the gospel. And then the second reason, to condition them to go on under holy living. And that's very important, by the way. And to comfort them regarding the return of Christ. And we'll see that when we get to it. Now, there are several ways of outlining this epistle. One of the ways, and it's a good one, is the coming of Christ is an inspiring hope. That's in chapter 1. And in chapter 2, the coming of Christ is a working hope. And then in chapter 3, the coming of Christ is a purifying hope. And then in chapter 4, the coming of Christ is a comforting hope. And then in chapter 5, the coming of Christ is a rousing hope. And that's a very good division. However, I don't use it. I personally have attempted to divide it a little different way. And those of you that have our notes and outlines, you have the outline before you. But for those of you that have not yet written in for your notes and outlines, well, let me give you our outline. We have in chapter 1 the Christian's attitude toward the return of Christ. And in chapter 2, the Christian's reward at the return of Christ. And chapter 3, down into chapter 4, verse 12, the Christian's life and the return of Christ. You see, the bulk of this epistle has to do with a Christian living in relation to the rapture of the church. There are a lot of people today want to argue prophecy, want to argue about it, but they don't want to spend much time looking at the great truth that if you really believe in the coming of Christ, that you'll find it's a purifying hope. He that hath this hope, John said, purifies himself. It'll affect your living. I don't care about how enthusiastic and exciting you can get over the great truth of the rapture of the church. I want to know how you're living. It's something that it should get right down where we're living today. And we're going to be talking about that. Now, we have not only the Christian's life and the return of Christ, but we have the Christian's death and the return of Christ. And that's in chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. And then chapter 5, the Christian's actions. Now, all the way from chapter 1, attitude to the Christian's actions in view of the return of Christ. And again, it's the life that tells whether you're a premillennialist or not. It's not how excited you can argue or how red in the face you can get when you get into controversy over this. I find a great many people, they get all worked up over the coming of Christ. But you don't get worked up over it. You're to demonstrate it in works down here. And he's going to talk a great deal, by the way, about that. Now, I think I should make this distinction also that's very important. In the first epistle of the Thessalonians, the emphasis is upon the rapture of the church, the coming of Christ to take his church out of the world. Now, in 2 Thessalonians, the emphasis is going to shift to the coming of Christ to the earth to establish his kingdom. And there's a great deal of difference of being caught up to meet the Lord in the air and for him to come down to the earth to establish his kingdom. And as I've said before, there's a lot of upside-down theologians today. They have him coming down when they should be caught up. And we need to make that distinction. Paul makes it, and we shall see it here.